This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:19 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Xiaoning and Philip. In the meantime, we're looking at developments in the crypto space here in Malaysia, actually. Now, Deputy Communications and Multimedia Minister Dato' Zahidi Zainal Abidin has proposed in the Dewan Rakyat on Monday for digital currencies such as cryptocurrencies, digital currencies such as cryptos, to be adopted as legal tender. And this was said in response to a supplementary question in relation to the government's stand on trading on non-fungible tokens or NFTs, which are becoming more popular amongst the younger generation.
Now, Malaysia would not, of course, be the first country to consider doing so, since El Salvador was the first in September last year to have actually adopted Bitcoin as a legal tender. But this move is not without its detractors, since the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, has subsequently urged El Salvador to reverse this move due to the large risks involved in cryptocurrencies, and also highlighted to the country that this move is a major obstacle for it to obtain loans from the IMF. But realistically, how easy is it for a country to adopt digital currencies as legal tender? And is Malaysia ready for such a move, or should it in the first place?
So for better understanding on this and some perspectives, we speak to Aaron Tang, country manager of Luno Malaysia. Good morning, Aaron. Thanks for joining us today. Now, as mentioned, countries such as El Salvador and more recently Ukraine, they've become pioneers in recognizing cryptos as legal tender. What are the arguments in favor of this move?
I think the arguments for cryptocurrency as a legal tender are based on the fact that it's not just a store of value, but it can also be used as a very convenient medium of exchange. So, for example, if we take Bitcoin, some of the key features of Bitcoin, you can take Bitcoin, one Bitcoin, and divide it into many, many small units, as small as 100 millionth of a Bitcoin, so 0.000 something. Bitcoin is also scarce, so the limited supply, that's where it derives its value from. Bitcoin is also durable, so it doesn't need to exist in physical form. It can't wear out like a physical banknote, for example. Bitcoin is also digital, it's very easily to transfer. You can transfer it to anywhere, anyone. It's also fungible. So like a dollar note, you can use one Bitcoin. It's always equal to another Bitcoin anywhere else in the world. So all these characteristics, put it together, and if you use it for payment, it can be argued that Bitcoin, it provides an opportunity to participate in global financial landscape without worrying about things like high fees or long transfers, etc.
Okay, so we've heard all the positives, but there are negatives, right? There are risks involved when it comes to cryptocurrency. One that, you know, keeps coming up again and again is the volatility of it. So is it suitable then, actually?
I think the volatility of cryptocurrency, especially at Bitcoin, it's because we're in the early stages of cryptocurrency adoption. Naturally, as you see, over the long-term trend, you've seen the Bitcoin continuing to go up in value over the long term, but it hasn't reached a point of stability. So if you ask me personally today, is it really a great idea to use Bitcoin in its current state as a legal tender or a means of payment? Probably not. But there are, of course, innovations like stable coins, for example, which are a lot more stable, which could be a temporary solution. And while, you know, Bitcoin may take a couple of more years or decades to reach a little bit more stability, perhaps at that point of time, it might be a bit more suitable.
Yeah, the other issue I have is that, you know, the fact that if you want to use it as legal tender, and we're talking about cryptocurrencies in general, right? Doesn't this imply that the digital infrastructure must exist and that, you know, we can use it easily? So this assumes that many Malaysians have smartphones, access to computers, and they understand the nature of how Bitcoin works. Are we there yet as a country?
You raise a great point, and I think that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done before we actually reach that point where everyone is very comfortable, everyone is very okay with the blockchain technology. Now, admittedly, it's not the easiest or not the most easily understood technology. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done still.
I'd like to look at the other end of the spectrum, Aaron, in the sense that El Salvador and Ukraine have recognized cryptos as legal tender, but then we've also seen China ban crypto transactions altogether. So what's the rationale for this strong stance against crypto?
I think with China is specifically looking at creating their own digital currency. So we've heard a lot about the digital yuan. And of course, I can't speak for the Central Bank of China or the People's Bank of China, but I suspect that they wouldn't want a completely decentralized kind of technology competing with what they're trying to do. And I think China has proven that it is perhaps more of the, more of the government that likes a lot more control instead of just allowing the markets to move much more freely. So I think that's the reason why China has clamped down on crypto. But you have to look at the wide spectrum of countries and, you know, how countries are approaching crypto. And China is definitely on the one extreme end, whereas most progressive governments are actually building regulations to manage and deal with crypto, for example, Ukraine, instead of outright banning it.
So tell us, what about the developments here in Malaysia? What's our country's stand at this moment, or in terms of Bank Negara's regulations?
As it stands, Bank Negara recognizes, well, Bank Negara and the SC, the Securities Commission, they recognize crypto as an investment, as securities, right? So people are buying into it, and then, you know, hopefully after a period of time, they'll be able to sell their investments. So it is recognized as such. To my knowledge, there's no... It's not like you can't use crypto, Bitcoin, you can't send it to anyone, for example, in exchange for a private contract or something. You could do that. There's no rules prohibiting that. What is clear is that today it does not have legal tender status. So you cannot like pay your taxes using Bitcoin, or you cannot pay your bank savings or something using Bitcoin. So we're not at the stage yet. I think the government authorities recognize that it is still in its infancy, and it is still recognized as an investment, not so much as a means of payment.
So what needs to be established actually for it to eventually be legal tender? I mean, do we look at El Salvador as a case study?
I think it's a good idea to look at El Salvador as a case study. And definitely you can see both sides of the argument there. You can see some people have adopted the use case of it. The government themselves, they actually bought some crypto, some Bitcoin as part of their treasury. So, you know, there are multiple angles that can be looked at. But if you go back to the original question, like, you know, are citizens of El Salvador using Bitcoin en masse? You know, a lot of them are using it to do payments. I think the answer to that is still a little bit questionable. Again, I don't think we're at that stage where Bitcoin is ready for mass use for payments yet.
Aaron, can I ask a little bit of a noob question? Because we have seen headlines over the past weeks about TNB and authorities cracking down on crypto mining. So, I mean, can you help us understand what actually crypto mining entails, and whether, you know, crypto mining activities need to be legalized for cryptos to become legal tender? How does this work?
Right. No noob questions. All questions are welcome, definitely. So if you talk about crypto mining, it is basically, just think about Bitcoin as a global ledger, a global book that's open to everyone and that everyone can see all the transactions happening, right? So when some of the Bitcoin transactions are happening, someone has to make sure that all the transactions are recorded properly, and that all the ledgers, all the books around the world are synchronized, right? We have to make sure that the data is good. So in this case, it's not done, in the case of Bitcoin, it's not done by a single person or a single company. It's not done by Google or Amazon or Microsoft. It's not done. It's done by thousands of computers all across the world connected to the internet. And these guys are known as the miners. They are the guys that are basically doing the transaction processing and checking to make sure that all the transactions are in order. So in terms of Bitcoin mining, these guys are doing the work and they're getting rewarded with a little bit of Bitcoin. And that Bitcoin is basically how they fund their operations, right? It's like running a business. Now, in terms of mining legality, it's important to note that mining is not illegal, right? Mining is fine. TNB has been very clear about that. The police has been very clear. What is illegal is the act of stealing electricity. So as long as you're doing mining legitimately, that's okay. And I think if we come up with a framework, for example, if the authorities come up with a good regulatory framework to encourage responsible mining, that could actually be pretty good for the industry and the country as a whole.
Erin, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Erin Tang, country manager of Luno Malaysia, helping us to break down whether Malaysia is ready to legalize cryptocurrencies as legal tender. I think for now, no. It's an outright no.
We are a little bit way off. One issue I have, which was a question I posed to him, is that are we ready as Malaysians to adopt all the technology that comes with it? You know, and if you really want it to be legal tender, then everybody must have access to smartphones, computers, things like that, and understand the nature of how it works.
And I just want to correct myself on a comment I made earlier. Ukraine has not technically recognized cryptocurrencies as legal tender, but they have legalized the framework for cryptos. So it's a little bit different there. But Phil, you were listening to the conversation. What did you think?
I think there were many challenges to do this. But what I think struck me is that there was also another press release that came out from Bank Negara, right, about central digital bank currencies. And it's a project called Project Dunbar. And apparently they've come out to say that it is probably technically possible for us to do this. But whether the market is ready is another bigger question.
And that was something that Erin pointed out, right? That right now the awareness about cryptos is probably still low. It needs to be, I think it needs to be fleshed out further. Mm-hmm. And maybe a couple years down the line, we're talking about years, you know, then maybe we might be in a better position to consider this seriously. Right now, I think it still remains an academic discussion.
Now, one more thing, and that's the economist in me, right? When we look at the concept of money, we also use it as part of monetary policy. Look at America, the way they print money to fund their expansion, to fund their growth, right? But with Bitcoin, and I'm using Bitcoin as an example, there's finite supply. How do you print more Bitcoin? Do you subdivide it? So there are questions I have. And also, how do you run parallel systems of legal tender? Is it possible? I mean, El Salvador probably does, but does it complicate things? What's, you know, how does it work? Well, and are there then arbitrage opportunities daily for you between legal tenders?
So many questions to explore, and we'll keep following this in future segments for sure. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.